It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
Because we wanted to dissect the very state of Xbox and Microsoft as it is today, being that we are three of the four people in the entire office who own Xbox Ones and like them.
Oh, it's shocking, that, isn't it?
It really is a bit weird. Yeah. I think the majority are PS4 fans. But not to worry, the big talking point on everyone's lips is that Microsoft came out last Saturday at the XO18 event and just straight up said, hey, we've purchased Obsidian and In Exile Entertainment, which is a rather large deal.
It is, isn't it? I was shooketh by this.
Yes.
I really am excited by it, to be honest. I think it's a good move. I think that they are now acquiring a lot of first-party studios to go forward into the next generation with, and hopefully they won't have an exclusive drought like they have now.
So we'll pick this apart a little bit. So, I mean, what was your initial reaction to that? Because you initially were like, In Exile is the dudes that did The Bard's Tale and Oh Dear Lord.
No, I thought it was really good. I think it's really nice that they're putting a focus on purchasing companies that do innovative things with RPGs as well, because I think that that's where they're going to do well.
Mm-hmm.
I think RPGs are just great, even though technically every game is an RPG, which is like...
Oh, yeah, let's not start that conversation again.
But I think that's a really great move for them. Oh, my God, I'm jumbling my words.
It is fine.
No, I think that's a really great move for them. I think Obsidian with Fallout New Vegas and all the fun stuff they do with that...
I'm going to reel off some Obsidian things.
Pillars,
so,
that's
yes,
it, yeah.
Pillars of Eternity is another one. They did Fallout New Vegas. They have Knights of the Old Republic 2, which is one of the most underrated, overlooked Star Wars RPGs ever.
Right.
Mm. South Park, Stick of Truth, and Alpha Protocol, which I don't know how many people know about Alpha Protocol, but it's pretty much Mass Effect if it was a spy RPG.
You know what, right? That tank when it first came out, obviously, but now it's got a steady cult following. People love that game, and I want to go back and revisit it, because at the time, didn't care for it, but now it's got Tilford's seal of approval.
I'm not going to lie, it's horrifically broken, but it is very, very full of ideas, and it's got a really good dialogue system, and you can create your own spy, you can be James Bond, you can be Jason Bourne, you can do all that stuff. There's so much promise in there. And so, yeah, Microsoft have acquired Obsidian, and assumedly they'll be making games that'll only be on Xbox, because the last time they did a high-profile acquisition was Mojang, which is Minecraft's company, but Minecraft was still on every other system under the sun. So you have to assume that this time going into the next gen that they'll be using Obsidian and using In Exile for their own stuff. In Exile, did The Bard's Tale, they do Wasteland, they do Torment, Tides of Numenera, which is, I've not got that deep into. Bard's Tale I've played quite a bit of,
perfect.
Back in the day.
Best game ever. If you haven't played it, go and find Bard's Tale and play it right now. You can get it on your phone, you can get it on your Xbox.
You can get it everywhere.
You can get it anywhere. Go and play it and sing along to all the songs and just do it. It's worth it.
You might think Black Flag had the sea shanties down, but Bard's Tale
their
shanty game is
take your word
is pretty high. So the last Bard's Tale game was, I think, Bard's Tale 4. That was the one that was more like a Scrolls game. So it seems like In Exile have always been kind of pushing towards bigger, getting back into the AAA space and that kind of stuff. And interestingly, both devs have put out really nice little videos on their channel where they sort of break down what it means to work with Microsoft. Obviously, it needs to be a big PR push anyway.
Yeah.
But the way that they're approaching it is just saying that, look, we always wanted to make games with a specific demographic in mind, which they always have. That's kind of why we know them. And they can now do that more. So there's a whole bunch of weird kind of ramifications that come from this because, like we were saying, if they, they're obviously being bought by Microsoft and they're making Obsidian games for Microsoft platforms, does that mean they can never do another Fallout? Or does that mean they can never do another Knights of the Old Republic? Assumedly, it's new IP. It can't be.
Well, this is the thing. We were talking about this before we started filming. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if Obsidian were going to do a new Fallout, if they were going to do a new Knights of the Old Republic, I feel like it would have happened now. Like, that is a big if that we were all clinging on to. And I don't think, if we were really honest about it, that would have ever actually happened. And it's nice to see them get a bit of stability and not sort of hoping on that one game they might make. And now we get to look forward to the games that they will make.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, in the Obsidian one, they do make a big point of saying, like, look, we're heavily influenced by tabletop RPGs, and that's our whole strength.
Yeah.
And a lot of people know them for Pillars of Eternity and things like that. And so, you'd assume that they're going to make a new IP going forward with that. But Fallout is in that video when they're talking about the things that they're known for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the Microsoft announcement. So they're still kind of teasing it. I mean, the only rumor that facilitated Obsidian doing more Fallout was the tandem thing. It was like Fallout 3's Bethesda, New Vegas' Obsidian, and we had Fallout 4. And then maybe going forward it was going to be Obsidian again. What?
You hate Fallout 4.
Everyone hates Fallout 4.
It's the biggest barrier in our friendship, Scott. I like Fallout 4. You don't like it.
Ash, Fallout 4.
Not good.
Thank you. That's all I needed from that.
I'll just go now. Yeah.
So it is worth pointing out the overall list of devs that Microsoft now have, because they've already had 343 Industries, they had the Coalition, they've got someone called the Initiative. There are kind of all these devs that they're putting together, and Major Nelson. I always get his surname wrong. Larry Herb. Mr. Herb. He put out a big tweet saying, "Look, big one happy Microsoft family, and here's all these different devs that we have." And it's just interesting looking at that, because you can note that 343 Industries are named after 343 Guilty Spark, which is from Halo, and the Coalition is the Coalition of Ordered Governments, the COG tags from Gears of War. So if they're naming some of their home studios after certain franchises, does that then limit them going forward as to what they can make? Are we just going to always get more Halo, more Gears, and that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I think this is why they've started buying up these already established companies, so they can make sort of new IPs and use those studios to create new exclusives going forward, whereas you have those specifically made studios like the Coalition or 343, like you said, to carry on those legacy franchises and hopefully breathe new life into them. Because I think they've more or less accomplished that. I really enjoyed Gears 4. Halo is in a weird place, but it's a sort of exciting place. They need a sort of revolution going forward, and I think we will see it. But I think Microsoft have finally realized that they can't just sustain themselves on these old franchises, as popular as they are, because, I mean, Halo, Gears, they're still huge franchises, and we all still love them, but when you're getting brand new IP from the likes of Sony and stuff, and Microsoft doesn't really have that, I think this is a response to that, so they still have these studios they've created to go back to the legacy franchises, and now they've got sort of fresh blood to bring in new experiences.
I think they need the fresh blood. I mean, have you played much Halo and Gears stuff?
I've played bits and pieces. I remember, I can't remember which Gears of War it was. It was one of the older ones. I remember playing that a bit. It might have been 2 or 3.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it obviously went to prominence after 2 and 3 was when it was everywhere.
Yeah, so I think I must have played it a bit then. And I loved all of the massive gory stuff, but for me, Gears of War 4 and the new Halo stuff, it didn't really...
Well, that's why I asked
that.
You're a big Xbox fan, but did you get Gears 4 or Halo 5? Because I feel like they were notable whiffs in those franchises. That's the thing.
No, I didn't. The thing is, as much as I champion Xbox and Xbox One and its system and everything, I think the exclusives are absolute paps.
They're not the best.
I'm not a massive fan of Halo. I'm not a massive fan of Gears of War. If I was looking at the games on the systems, I wouldn't look at Xbox and go, I want that one, because I just think it's absolute crap. But the... this whole move is a way of them challenging people with a mindset like me.
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
because it's unless you grew up with these franchises, they're not necessarily one note. Halo has this whole big lore behind it.
Yeah.
There's comics. There's different ways that they've sort of expanded that stuff, and Gears does too. But just being able to say the studios that they've had for the longest time are going to do more of these games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a double-edged kind of thing.
I know what you mean. I think I sort of let them off because it seems like they're trying new stuff. We don't know what Halo Infinite is. That could be. God, could be Battle Royale for all I know. You've got that, you've got Gears Tactics, and you've got Gears Pop Vinyl.
That'll be your Battle Royale game.
I said they were doing interesting things, I didn't say they were good things. You know what I mean?
True. I mean, if you fall down the stairs in a fast enough and mangly enough manner, that's interesting, but it's not necessarily worthwhile.
Yeah.
The other studios that they're joining, which I completely forgot to mention before, that they already had, because they announced 4 other studios back at E3. They were
loads, isn't
it? Yeah, they were just throwing their weight around. So they bought Playground Games, which is Forza Horizon, which is weird that they had to sort of redouble down on them. I thought they would already have them. But whatever. So Forza Horizon's already locked in. You've got State of Decay's devs, Undead Labs. You've got Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice from Ninja Theory, and Compulsion Games, who did We Happy Few.
What I love
is
that a lot of these studios, regardless of what you think of We Happy Few or not, they're all sort of single-player-driven games. which is interesting because you would have thought the way the industry is going, they might have shifted towards, you know, like multiplayer shooters, online shared world shooters, MMOs, something like that, something to get that crowd in, because Sony have a lot of great sort of story-driven exclusives.
Yeah.
And Microsoft seem to be trying to also match them in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of, I don't know, it's comforting to know that single player isn't going to die anytime soon because you've got these two big platform holders putting a lot of money and resources into making them. At least you would assume so, considering the studios they've bought.
I mean, looking at like the last couple of years, there was this whole narrative that like single player games had died out and stories were gone and oh God, it's just going to be a future of like Overwatch sequels. And whatever, but I just, that stuff just has not taken hold. Like, people have, like, bounced back off microtransactions so hard. And then you look at something like Red Dead 2, which has sold more than, like, any other game in its first Fortnite, its first two-week period ever.
Yeah.
And it's like, you look at God of War, you look at Zelda, it's like, clearly stories are ingrained to, like, the way that we take in entertainment, and you can't just go around them. So, yeah, I'm happy that, like, Xbox is assumedly, like, going to put together a bunch of first-party exclusives that will be able to be up there with The Last of Us, the God of Wars, the Zeldas, that kind of stuff.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, I can't name, apart from Forza Horizon 4, I can't name of any, can't think of any Xbox One game that I would say is worth buying the system for.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can.
No, honestly, I can't. I think the exclusives are not good, like I say, but obviously it runs all the other good games, so it works well.
It runs Netflix very well.
It does run, it's a very good home entertainment system. But no, I think it's great having a single player push, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's just, you don't want them to be feeling like they're playing catch up with some of PlayStation's titles is the only thing, so I think they've got to really be careful that they're producing unique content as well as new stuff, and then really solidifying the old things as well, like you said, with the legacy titles and stuff. They need like something's going to come out and go, here's a whole new audience that can access it, as well as it paying respects to the old.
I think it'll be very interesting to see what they do, what the companies that they've bought on do next, because like I said, I mean, the assumption is that 343 and the Coalition will just be locked to Halo and Gears going forward. Obviously Turn 10 only do Forza, and so like you've got the likes of Obsidian. Ninja Theory's next project should assumedly do really well. I mean, Hellblade's sold really well considering its budget. And a lot of people know the name of Hellblade even if they haven't played through the whole thing themselves. So it's a lot of promise, but I would assume that they're buying all these people up this early so that when the next generation rolls around in like 2 or 3 years,
they've got stuff.
Yeah, they go, here's our launch titles, and like for once a console actually has a body of launch titles that's worth buying that isn't the Super Nintendo.
What's super fascinating to me is that a lot of the studios you just mentioned, like Ninja Theory, Obsidian, and others that I've forgotten about.
Undead Labs.
Yeah, Undead Labs. There's like a great fan groundswell to them. The games they put out might not like be Call of Duty level successes, but they have such dedicated fan bases, and they have fans that want to see them, want to support them. Like a lot of the games were Kickstarted and stuff. I know Obsidian used that platform, and a lot of these developers have. And so it's great to, Microsoft are not only buying these studios, they're not buying the fans. That sort of sounds really bad when I put it like
that's
that.
That's honestly, though, like, that's a great way to think of it.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, you had the whole 360, the last generation, the Xbox 360, riding high. That was clearly the fan favorite, the cultural positive console. Everyone had an Xbox 360, and the PS3 was just kind of like on the side or whatever. Yeah. And it felt like at the turn of the generation, Microsoft messed everything up with the reveal of the Xbox One. And that just kind of pivoted. So, like, them going forward with, like, you know, they're helping out someone like Obsidian who have struggled to get one of their own projects off the ground. And they go, hey, we've got all the money, and we're going to bring you in. Microsoft family, we offer you this like infrastructure. It's kind of what EA is doing with their EA indies, but doing it better. As much as I love the EA indie stuff, it feels like Microsoft have more goodwill around them. I think people want to see Microsoft succeed again because of
definitely.
The 360.
I miss the 360.
Same.
I think the titles they're going for, not necessarily the titles, but the companies as well, it's like there's a whole PC drive behind them as well. There's a big load of PC gamers who are very faithful to lots of the titles who maybe might go for Xbox stuff, I don't know, but it means that they'll go to PC as well, because Microsoft tend to do both, don't they?
That's a great point, actually, because their exclusives aren't necessarily exclusives. They always go to PC as well. And if you get that PC fan base in, you might not only get some of them spilling over to Xbox or just get those people buying your games on the PC.
So we can talk about that as well. That was one of the things I was going to pivot into, was their wider approach to the next generation, because Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox and marketing and stuff, has been out there in a bunch of interviews saying that the future of Xbox, or as far as they're planning it, seems to be more like a monthly service. And they launched the Xbox Game Pass, which has done extremely well. They've now put all their exclusives just on their day one.
Yeah.
And so in my head, the head maths doesn't work, because you're only paying...
the head maths.
Like, the head cannon just doesn't work. Because you're only... I mean, I forget how much Game Pass is, because it's on sale at the minute. I think it's about £7 to £8 a month, might be more.
$7.99 a month.
Right. Either way, it's less than £10. Yeah. So it's not like a massive premium thing. But they're putting all these games on it, brand new games that need to sell. But you have to assume that Game Pass is doing so well that so many people are putting £10 down a month that they're making hundreds and or thousands of thousands upon pounds and dollars to pay back all those devs. Like in my head, that it seems like a crazy gamble, but they keep pushing forward with it. So their approach to the next generation, assumedly, is going to be this whole monthly service thing and everything will just be on there.
Life is full of awesome what ifs and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Well, the thing about Microsoft is that they have more money than sense, right? So they can afford to take a bit of a hit on, like, trying these things out if it gets people in the long term. Like, they're looking at this, like we're talking about, for, like, the next generation. If they can solidify this now, and if they lose a bit of money now, it might reap the rewards in a couple of years' time when the Xbox X2... 720. When
Scarlet.
The next Xbox oh, the Scarlet, Scarlet
Xbox
name.
Scarlet.
Comes out.
Not a
know.
Fan of the name. Like that's supposed to all be online streaming as well, so it's all saved in the cloud, which would tie into...
Oh, they need to move away from the cloud.
That whole thing.
The cloud did not work whatsoever.
Oh, I remember how good the cloud was in Crackdown 3.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
What, you mean Crackdown New Federation, or whatever the hell it's called? Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the PC stuff because, like, all the exclusives are now on launch on PC as well, which, again, you would assume at the outset that that's a massive risk because then why would you ever buy Xbox if you're already on PC? But they seem happy to go in the whole, like, you know, Windows platform moving forward and putting everything out regardless of whether you have PC or console. I think all that stuff, to me, it feels like a risk. Like I said, that the maths doesn't feel like it adds up.
Yep.
But it's really good for the consumer. Obviously, you get a massive amount of stuff per month and you can just download whatever you want. But going forward, like, they've already done backwards compatibility work, so I have to assume that the next generation is going to be the Xbox as a legacy machine. It'll be original Xbox games, 360 games, and the Xbox One stuff, and you just pay, like, one monthly fee for, like,
that
loads.
Would
I'm here for
be
that.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That would be so good. I know, like, PS5 is looking at doing backwards compatibility now. It seems the 4 didn't really...
That is a good rumor to bring in. We've looked at that before we hopped in. So, yeah, apparently Sony's looking at doing backwards compatibility as well. Because they'll need to. I mean, the thing that one of the biggest examples of Sony just going, like, right, we got it wrong. What's the competition doing? Let's do that. Was they launched PlayStation Now as a streaming service per month using the Gaikai tech, and it just didn't work. It was laggy, and everyone complained about it. Microsoft Microsoft, when they launched the Game Pass, just said, look, just download the game and just forgo the lag. And so eventually Sony went, you know what? Yeah, do that. And so that's what PlayStation Now is now.
Yeah.
And so again, I have to assume that the next generation, they're going to go back into their legacy stuff and give you like a 1 month thing.
That was the fascinating news story I saw just before we came in, is that PlayStation Now was apparently doing better than the Games Pass and any of the other competition live services, which is wild because I didn't even like... PlayStation Now, at least initially, was a really bad service.
It was,
like
yeah.
The idea was great, but like you said, you couldn't even play a Sly Cooper on it without it lagging.
No.
But now you can like download games, and they've taken a leap out of Xbox's book, and it seems to be working for them. And we're going to see more of that in whatever console they have next. And I'm sure Microsoft are going to double down it. The bottom line is that sort of service seems to be working, even if the Game Pass isn't doing as well as PlayStation Now. It is still doing well, and I think that only confirms that we will absolutely see those kinds of services going forward.
Is that, just to hop in, would you say that it's probably because more people own PlayStations that the PlayStation Now is doing better? Because like, even as the avid Xbox lover I am, I've got a PlayStation recently.
You
and,
traitor.
And I maybe wouldn't get PlayStation Now on it, but...
I haven't got PlayStation Now. Yeah, I don't know anyone who does.
I like Game Pass, but most people have PlayStation, or people that I know that have Xboxes have traded them for PlayStations.
Yeah.
Like, there's a big push towards those, so I guess you'd put everything on there and try out PlayStation Now, however good it is. So that would be my argument for it.
But
Game Pass is definitely better.
I mean, that's an extremely good point, because there are so many more bodies that have PS4s than Xbox, so at some point it is just going to tip that way. And plus, like, I mean, when Sony rectified the whole download issue, they didn't exactly shout about it. They just sort of said, like, PlayStation Now kind of works now, and they you know keep promoting it on the PlayStation Store, and it's like the idea of like, you know, here's this monthly service for a bunch of things that you maybe remember from nostalgia or you just want to try out is at its core a great idea.
Yeah.
So it seems like both machines or both companies are going forward with the same thing. But how much stock do you guys put in that like appeal of the brand, the legacy kind of thing, versus new IP, like new titles or new experimentation or new mechanics?
A lot. I think you only have to look at the announcement of backwards compatibility on like the original Xbox One. Like that was a huge win for them, and it's a huge feature for like the Xbox. Like I think mine would have just gathered dust had I not had that backwards compatibility ingrained in it, but that only sort of worked because the competition didn't have it. So I don't know how big of a deal it is if everyone's got it across the board, and then you've also got these streaming services where you can also play old games on it, you know what I mean? I don't know how those two things coexist. I don't know how you have backwards compatibility and then also a service that lets you play an old game.
I assume it's everything in one. Like, I'd pay more than 10. Like, I would pay like a set amount for just like, you know, they would rotate things out like Netflix and Prime do and just kind of have, you know, like here's old Xbox classic Brute Force, and you can go play that for the five people who remember Brute Force. It was really good. But you can do that kind of thing, and then they can be like, next week it's, I don't know, whatever, the new Crackdown 5 or whatever. They could do that kind of stuff. I think it's necessary to like to respect the legacy of the brands that got you there.
Yeah.
And Nintendo have always done that with a mix of respect and just pay us for another emulated version of Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, the legacy of PlayStation, there are so many old PlayStation games that would be worth bringing back.
I think you just sort of look at something like the PlayStation Classic or the NES Mini and stuff like that. There's a real hunger for these old games because game sort of preservation is so bad. If you buy things digitally, there's a chance you will never be able to, like, it'll just go off the store.
Make you pay for it again, baby.
Pay for it again, remasters. It's so hard to get, like, old PS2 games, like, maybe PS1 games. You go into town and you're looking, like, the secondhand shops. It's, like, Spyro the Dragon's, like, 25 quid.
Yeah.
It's, like,
it's an investment.
But that's because there's a £40 remaster coming out. I mean, that's the thing. You look at the PlayStation Classic, and it doesn't have any of the, hardly any of the PlayStation Classic games on it. There's no Tomb Raider, Crash, Spyro, or whatever, because there's remasters coming out, and they want you to pay for them instead.
Yeah.
So as much as, like, it's for the consumer to respect the legacy, they can monetize the legacy instead.
I think that's the difference between Microsoft and Sony, though, with this sort of thing as well, is that Sony, they don't like to play cross-platform. They don't like to give you your stuff backwards compatibility. They don't like to think about what the consumer actually wants. They like to think how they can make money off their consumers in like a massive way, whereas I feel that Microsoft are more about making everything accessible to everyone and doing it at an affordable price and bringing people in. And like, they're trying to appeal to new fan bases and broaden their horizon and bring gaming back to gamers in that sort of way is how I feel about it. I think they're doing all the right things. And I like Sony, and I think Sony do good stuff, but I think they're definitely more driven by what they can make the most.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you go back across the generations and it always flips. Like, you know, the PS2 absolutely dominated, and then the PS3 failed, and then that went too big for its boots, and then like the 360 came in. And it's just like, you know, 360 was so on top of the world that Don Matrick just went out and and just said, we're going to dominate the living room. You're going to want to control your TV with a voice. And we all went, no. And then it just completely fell apart. So the position that they're in now, yeah, I agree that they've got like this kind of, it's almost like an underdog for a multi-million dollar company.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they do have that sort of like, go on, dude, just give it a bit of a go. And like, you know, Phil Spencer has done all the right moves and he has managed to cultivate this sort of like atmosphere or fandom around Microsoft again. Mm. Mainly just because the more close to competition, the better it works out for the consumer.
Yeah.
For the most part, anyway. But I mean, I guess going into the next generation, what's one thing that you want to see? Do you think it should be one amazing new exclusive, one new console feature, or just what do you reckon?
More VR, please.
No one needs more VR.
That's a
only.
Rumor, though, isn't it that they're going to have PSVR like yep. in the PlayStation? Like
that's one of the rumors.
Just in there, but why? That's just for Josh.
I literally is.
Thank you, Sony.
I mean,
thank you so much.
I mean, like I remember when. Yeah, that's the thing. One of the rumors for the PS5 is PSVR, but I am not seeing the stats for PSVR at all. Literally, you're the only person I know who has
a PSVR.
Right?
It's because it's in an experimental phase. It's still like what 2 million or something. It's doing all right. You're finally seeing
more light. Yeah.
Great. We're finally seeing really good games come out for it. Firewatch was great. Astro Boy is the
Firewatch is on regular systems, though.
Not Firewatch.
The other one?
The other one.
The one with the shooting in it?
It's so good, I can't remember
the
name.
Is it that first-person shooter one, is it?
It is,
yeah,
yes.
That one.
What is the name
Is it not Fireteam Bravo?
Firewatch.
Okay, both of you struggled through that. Well, let's do a bit of back and forth. We'll
because his whole thing is making this case for VR, which is not even there.
It's brilliant, mate.
I mean, everyone can let us know in the comments or, you know, wherever they find us on social media, just how much of a ravenous VR fan base there is.
Look,
but I ain't seeing it. Either way,
Ash.
Though... Well, yeah, go on.
As much as I... Wait, hold on. We're talking about VR still?
No,
please, for the love of God, move on.
As much as I crap on it, I do think that there's a future in it. It just needs refining,
is what
I want to say. Mm-hmm. What I want to see on the next systems, I think, is just, like, system-defining games. Like, I want to see new IPs. I want to see something, like, amazing on Xbox One that everyone goes, whoa, I'm buying that. I think buying Obsidian, who did the Fallout New Vegas thing, obviously they're not doing Fallout anymore, but like something like Bethesda on their side and having an early release, not exclusive, because that would be very bad.
I mean, to many people, Obsidian is a better Bethesda. A lot of people prefer New Vegas to 3.
Yeah.
New Vegas is the best one.
Well, there you go.
See? Oh, yeah.
So it's like, even though they haven't signed Bethesda, they've signed what a lot of people, you know, refer to as the best one.
So I think something on that scale... mm-hmm. would be amazing, and like I always feel like Bethesda are buddies with Xbox because they use like the controller, and like the beta for Fallout 76 came out early on Xbox One, that sort of thing. So I'd like just as an example that there is big companies like really interested, and I think just having a new IP, something amazing, that's what I am invested in.
Yeah,
big new story.
I mean, for the on the 360, I mean, I remember back in my day when it was the Gary Jules Mad World trailer for the first Gears of War.
Oh, I remember that.
Was that before your time?
No, well, it was like
three.
I was like, what, six? No, I was young.
But that trailer just landed and everyone was talking about it. It had this really great sense of atmosphere to it. It was a brand new IP, but it hit the ground running. I don't feel like Xbox have done that with anything this generation.
No, not really.
I mean, you had Sunset Overdrive. Yeah, Sunset Overdrive, which is all wacky and zany, but the debut trailer for that had this horrible forced, like, hey, kids, kind of tone. And it just didn't work. And it was like, you know, they just need to take a step back and go, what are our strengths? Because people do want to like Xbox. Yeah. And enough people now treat the Xbox with nostalgia, even though it only came out after like 2000 or whatever, but there's plenty of people whose childhoods were dominated by the Xbox and the 360. So I always kind of think there's a way forward for them. So I guess we'll wait and see, but at the minute they're snapping up developers like it's nobody's business.
Like it's like they're getting like the little army men in position for like going into the next war to come.
Actually, I'll tell you what I thought we can end on. If there's any particular developer, it can't be anyone massive because they could afford them, but they won't do it.
Yeah.
Is there any particular indie dev or someone like that you would like them to recruit? Because I would probably go with someone like Supermassive, which is the dudes, Supermassive is the Sony one.
Yeah.
Supergiant are the guys that did Bastion and Transistor and Pyre. And they one of their biggest strengths is that they have complete independence. But to get their games in front of more people, the art direction in those games and the story and just... Oh, I absolutely adore Supergiant. And I would love them to be part of a bigger like family of stuff. Like, I'd rather a Supergiant game got as big as an Ori and the Blind Forest, where people associate it with a certain brand.
That'd be awesome.
Good sir, what
is yours?
I don't know. It's a hard question for the evening.
That's a big drop.
Could they save BioWare.
Oh God! If BioWare do end up leaving EA, they're not doing very well. Anthem's not going to do.
We'll see.
Very well.
It might do.
We'll see. I mean, hopefully it will. I mean, I obviously don't want any ill will to BioWare, especially since Casey Hudson finally came back and like the dude that actually made Mass Effect amazing and then kind of ruined it again. But he's back with BioWare. So if BioWare end up becoming like a free agent again, that would be a hell of a get.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what they would do, but potentially something good.
That'd be good.
Good Ash, what would you have?
I think the Bard's Tale Maker's Obsidian is so good. Like, I'm just happy. I'm so happy that, like, because I just remember playing that game so much and being so enamored with it. I'm so glad that, like, an actual. Blah, blah, blah. I'm so glad that it'll come to console. But, like, another indie developer would be a CD Projekt Red. Oh, yeah. That indie developer.
They're tiny. They've got Witcher to offload.
But, you know, if they got something like that, obviously.
Yeah, something that's got, like, a cult fan base or a passionate fan base, regardless. Yeah. I mean, the Bard's Tale fan base is weirdly active. Considering it's the Bard's Tale.
Literally, you mention it, people are like, oh my God.
I know.
Like, literally, it's like, as soon as I saw it with them, I was like,
the amount of people freaking out over the fact that you can pat a dog in Red Dead Redemption 2. You know which game had dog patting in first?
What?
Bard's Tale, mate. That's,
and it has the songs, the best songs
you
ever.
You can hang out with your little dog, you can name it, and go on an RPG quest. It's awesome, and hopefully they'll do Bard's Tale 5 on the Xbox Scarlet.
You know who I think they might buy?
Go on.
Ready at Dawn.
Oh, that'd be a hell of a poach.
They've just opened up a new studio, I've seen. And it could be Microsoft. Ooh, get it going back
into mind. After The Order, they're kind of flailing, so yeah.
But they might have something good up the sleeve.
Nah.
Maybe.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. But let us know what you think down in the comments or find us on social media with all your thoughts and ting. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott, from that site that I just said. And now Ash is going to say stuff.
And I'm Ash.
And I'm Josh, I think.
Yes, and we'll catch you guys soon.
Bye. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.